All right, and welcome back to a somber and sobering Coast to Coast to Coast podcast. I am your host, Chad, and I'm joined out on the East Coast by Dale and up north by Chip. Jim had some unfortunate technical difficulties with his Microsoft Windows browser, and he was unable to log in with us today. But we are going to try to carry you through this, just three of us today. You guys holding up all right?
Actually, I'm doing really well, Chad. I'm feeling a lot better this week. And, well, not after a Browns loss, but physically, I'm feeling better.
Medically.
Important.
Yeah. This is going to be kind of like a rehab Tuesday here. What about you, Dale?
I'm doing better tonight, but I'm not going to lie. This last night and this morning was it was rough to walk away and feel that, I don't know, impending doom is probably a little strong, but like honestly just a little sick to my stomach. Not that it was there was anything that should have, like, oh, we had it, whatever the case may be. Like, I think we all went in with similar expectations. But, like, at the end of the day, the result is the same. So,
yeah, this was, I honestly think
after the game, because
it was just such a hard hit and almost, like, unbelievable. And then I just sat there finishing my Christmas, talking to some of the guys at the bar as people sort of, there was a handful of course, you know, people that just got up and walked out immediately, like, see ya. And then there's a handful of stragglers that sat around chatting about it a little bit. And it sort of just felt a little unreal. And I went home and I was like, well, I get not bad. I thought I'd be devastated. I'm not. And I woke up this morning and it was like, man, I can't believe that actually happened. This really
I was sucks. I was in the walk house. And either my wife or children kicked the remote as they were driving, and I missed the reception and ensuing game-winning field goal. So I found out about the loss via our text group, and while I poured a drink and made dinner. So I just removed myself from the living room to the kitchen and kind of dealt with it that way in my own pouty way.
I think what hurt me too a lot was they kind of hit us with a game winning pass to get in field goal range twice.
The first my gosh, one, devastating, right?
And then when the first one got called back with holding, I'm like, oh, this is it, man. Finally, we get a holding call. A.
Now it's B, second and 11.
It takes him out of range and gives us another opportunity to stop him here. And of course, they put themselves right back in field goal range.
Yeah, and so it's a big bag of disappointment. And this is not how we wanted to have Nog Week. We've been building up this whole Christmas season, the whole holiday season, with the different holiday beers, and we landed on right before Christmas Nog Week. And I thought it was going to be a celebration Nog. And then the reality of COVID hit the week before and everyone was out and it was so hectic. And then we got into the game, low expectations. And then there was just that point of the game where you just said, where it's second and 11, we held them back. There's only a couple seconds left. And I'm thinking, oh my God, this is going to be a celebration podcast. We're actually in place to win this scrappy, terrible game where we had no business being there because we're on a third string quarterback with no practice time and a bunch of practice squad players and guys who are coming back from injury or COVID getting back just in time. And wow, I can't believe they pulled this off. And then two passes later, one with bad coverage and the one before that with just two missed tackles that probably could have ended the game. And here we are with, I don't know.
Yeah. Chad, you bring up a really good point there kind of at the beginning. I've heard from friends and family and all the disgust and everything, but I don't know that everyone was giving them credit for that. Like, we literally had walk-ons and third stringers and all these guys playing who shouldn't have been, or non-starters, but like, they didn't even get to practice together. Like, that's the other thing, where it's not like, oh, you had some injuries and guys got a full week reps. Like, I think it hurt a little bit that we were still in it. Our defense kept us in it, all on them, and just couldn't quite get there with all of that, with them not getting to be in the building together. It was still impressive in a still frustrating kind of manner, because the outcome was the same. If we lost by 40 and we got blanked like Tom Brady did this week, it'd feel, I don't know, worse, but the end result's the same.
Yeah, I think you'd feel like, I think you'd be a lot more apt to say COVID totally screwed us. We never stood a chance. Like, this is a mess. And the fact that they held in it and came back to catch up and take the lead kind of is what switches you from just regular disappointment to like ultra disappointment, because dystopian, they worked their way back in it. And I think everybody watching that game probably goes, they should have won. Where if you lost by 40, you'd say the team was demolished. They never had a chance. They shouldn't have won. They just too much to overcome. But once they put themselves in a position where they should have won, then it kind of kills you. I don't know. It's but it is disappointing, and it was a roller coaster of a week and a roller coaster of a game with a real hard drop at the end. I had some stuff I wanted to talk about through each portion of the team. Well, the beginning of it's going to be a little bit negative, sorry, but it sort of is that feeling right now, so it kind of matches the feeling. And then the end, I want to talk about whether there's any bright spots to look at. The reality is the season's not over, but there is a pretty high level of doom and gloom at this point. And it makes it pretty tough, because you basically are looking at, if this had happened, I don't know, 6 weeks ago, you'd say, wow, this team is tough and they're fighting and they're still going to be there. But because of the numbers, it's more like, oh, now it's kind of probably going to be too little too late. Like, it's hard to find moral victories when now mathematically you might have bumped yourself out of what could have been a really good end of the season playoff run. So any other thoughts on the general mood? This is basically the mood portion of the podcast.
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely really down, pretty bummed out. I mean, the ultimate goal, no matter how fun or good the season looks, the ultimate goal is to make the playoffs and give yourself a chance to have a shot at the Super Bowl. And it looks like that's out of the picture for us. And it also hurts, because it's like, I'm looking around the league and I don't feel like there's any team that is like far and away like we couldn't beat. You know what I mean?
Would you say a good run would be that we don't look like a Super Bowl team, but because nobody else does, it would be nice to be right in the mix right now?
That's, I guess, what I'm trying to say, is I don't see anybody else out there that I say to myself, well, even if we were there, we couldn't beat them. I mean, I guess Green Bay, but
yeah, well, maybe it's all the NFC.
Yeah.
The AFC, though, you're right. If I would put up against Kansas City, you know, as we get healthier, especially, I put us against Kansas City, Buffalo. I would put us in there with the Titans, Colts. I would put us in there with just somehow New England is the scariest team to me out of those. But I would put us at least in a matchup with most of these teams if we're healthy. And it just is a bummer, because all you really wanted after this game was to be there and still be talking about it. So,
yeah, from an AFC perspective, it's kind of a crapshoot kind of year. There's so many injuries, COVID stuff. I think the entire AFC is 8-7 or whatever.
Yeah.
It'd be good, and there's whatever, maybe, right there. So. There's guys on this team like Chubb that, and Garrett, I just don't want to see them waste their prime here and never see the playoffs, or, well, they did that a little bit last year, but you know what I mean? Like, have a real shot.
Yeah, it's the Joe Thomas.
I was just going to say, it's not quite the level of Joe Thomas, who was like an elite athlete the whole time and never got there and only had one winning season. It's more like they made it there once, but this team, they have to all feel like they're good enough to have made it there a few years in a row. And this gives everybody so many more questions, like the topic of Baker. He didn't even play this week, but because they're on the position they're in for the season, it brings up questions and problems that you didn't want to have to even think about yet. But I don't know. It's somber, and it's kind of a gloomy thing, but.
And I guess
it didn't help that last year, it seemed like COVID was going to wreck our season too, with Garrett being out and severely affected, and all of the issues we had and games lost. I mean, we kind of snuck in at the end, but it's not a dissimilar situation where it's like, oh, we're getting things together, people are getting back healthy, and apparently everybody just gave each other butterfly kisses along with the Rams.
Two or three teams.
Yeah, just one of those things that seems like we were getting better.
Yeah.
And kind of kicking the teeth.
On that COVID note, don't want to get deep into COVID. Hopefully most of the guys come back this week. They should all start testing negative in the next day or two. It's usually around 10 days. But the big thing is, I listened to something earlier in an interview with Aditi Kinkabal, and I thought she made a really good point, because her point was the NFL was trying to adjust the protocol so these guys who are healthy, young, vaccinated, and asymptomatic just aren't getting tested and held out.
Right.
And she made just a really good point. The way she worded it, I don't know that I'll nail it, but essentially what she said was, at this point, there's enough people out there and enough testing done and enough research back to know that especially young people who are vaccinated who get this aren't going to die. And at worst, they're going to get a little bit sick. You know, they're going to get a bad illness. But the vaccine's available to them. They can get it or not at this point. And really, she's like, I would be happy if they just said, hey, if you're really sick, maybe you get tested and you don't play. Otherwise, I'd be fine if they just stopped testing these guys and said, you know, make the best decision for your own health and let's go. Your family and things like that are your responsibility from this point on, and your teammates, and just scrapped this level of testing and saw how it went. And it's hard to disagree with that at this point with all the stuff that went on this week, where with all these asymptomatic people, and just thinking maybe just let it ride at this point.
This was the first time that I've seen, and I'll go ahead and skip ahead to my Twitter reaction. This was the first time I've seen in 2 years now with this, that everyone has basically been on board with, if you were asymptomatic and you are vaccinated, let them play.
Yeah. And they just try. I think that's what they're kind of trying to do with the adjustments in the protocol. And it just didn't happen. It didn't really work, but I don't know, but I just thought it was a really good take, and it was really well worded, much better, obviously, when she did it, cause she's a pro and I'm as amateur.
So good.
As
she's one of the best. We got
one of my favorites. Yeah. She's one of my favorites.
We got to steal her away.
Hey, maybe we get her on the show.
Yeah, maybe she can host for Jim. She was telling me earlier how she could. the Browns game, you know, from a whole, we kind of already went over. I was going to ask you guys what your most disappointing play of the game was. Just like, what play was it like? I wish this had not happened, or this really like.
Oh, I could tell you mine right away.
Go for it.
When Nick Mullins stepped back, took a big hit, threw the ball deep to Donovan Peoples-Jones, and it looked like a good, solid reception. I'm not really sure if it got knocked out or if Peoples dropped it, but to me, I just felt deflated, and I feel like some players might have felt deflated at the moment, but it just looked like that was our breakaway play to get out, and I think Mullins took a nice shot there, and then it just, you know, it was incomplete.
The kid played a great second half. That's both Mullins. I was referring to Peoples-Jones, but I guess both. But the first half, drop.
Yeah, I was gonna cheat and ignore the actual question and just say the drops. It was, yeah. It just seemed like in every spot that he had a guy, maybe the pass wasn't perfect, and there, I know there was a couple high throws where you're still hitting him in the hands. And yeah, maybe their elbows were tucked in a little because they were worried. But like, man, it just felt like on the early downs when we were passing, which is so important to get those yards on first and second, when the defense can't go and just pin their ears back on third down because they know you have to pass.
Yeah.
We just missed so many of those that just put us in a bad spot. Because when miss those and you're at third and eight, you're at third and six, it's just harder to run Nick Chubb. And he got those, but it just seemed like over and over that was kind of the case where it was one step forward, two steps back.
So you guys, I'm going to go the exact opposite direction. And I thought maybe one of you would say this, but your take is right there. I mean, a dropped pass, especially one for like a 40-yard gain or anything over 20 where it should be a catch, has been killing us all season. And it really could have swung that game in a point where you take the Raiders out of it early and get to do the running plan that you wanted to do. I was thinking the exact opposite. That last, not the last catch of the game even, but that catch to the tight end, his name escapes me, for the Raiders.
Oh, Foster Moreau.
That catch Moreau made where both Ward and JOK, two of our just most elite defensive players, both run up and kind of look as if they're both slowing up for one another. And Foster Moreau just stops for a second and then just runs right in between them for an extra 6-yard gain. Where if either one of them had just done what they typically do, and that's just throw their body into somebody, either he gets knocked out of bounds and they're in a really rough position, or he hits the turf before he goes out of bounds and they're pretty much done because they have to scramble in for a touchdown play without any time. And I watched him catch that pass, and my first thought was almost to cheer because I saw the two of them going at him, and I thought, yes, because I thought they were just going to slam him. He was going to hit the ground. It was going to take off this time, and they were going to have to run in and try to throw a massive pass. And to me, that was kind of woof. That was a really tough one for me. Even the pass they made after it to get a little closer field goal, the way he kicked that kick at the end, that play was almost irrelevant. He knocked that thing with so much distance to go through the uprights. That Foster Moreau play, the time on that was just so tough for me. And the fact that usually we get on Ward for throwing his body too hard into guys and being reckless, and there he kind of eased off a bit, and so did JOK, and Moreau just ran right through him. So that was it. As a lot of people talk to, and as you can see from the title of the podcast, we essentially in the last 3 seconds of that game went from first place in the division, where we continue to control our own destiny, but we're sitting kind of in the driver's seat and on top of the throne, immediately dropped to last. What have you guys ever seen anything like that? That's pretty insane.
I mean, it just makes it harder to swallow, Chad. I'm trying not to think about it.
like, have you ever seen, like, they brought it up so many times on the broadcast, it couldn't have been clear enough. If the Browns win, they're in first. If they lose, they're in last.
Yeah, it's pretty disappointing to be in that situation. I know we're going to touch on it a bit later. It's not over, but it's hard to see how people could leave that thinking that that it's not.
Like, hopefully the team doesn't feel like us because it feels over.
Yeah, the difference is we were in the driver's seat. We're not anymore. Mm-hmm.
We need some favors. Another super disappointing play that rung out and should ring out, and it's going to bring up some questions for in and off season. We missed a kick again. Our kicker's been like 5 for 11 in the last couple of weeks. And we lost by the points that it would take if he had made that kick.
I'm not going to say I told you so. Because I already apologized for my initial.
When would I be longing for Cody Parkey? Everybody thought you should apologize too, because you're like, hi, you made fun of this guy and he's 8 for 8. And since then, he has been a disaster. He's now, I think I looked up the stats earlier. He's now the 28th or 29th field goal percentage of starting kickers. And if you count guys that are out or injured, I think he ends up being like 32nd. It's pretty bad. He's at like 71%. That sucks. I don't know what we do. There's three kickers in the league right now that we had in the last 4 years who are outplaying him, who we dropped because they weren't that great.
Yeah, and I mean, he's at 71%.
Yeah. Zane Gonzalez, Austin Seibert, and Greg Joseph are all outplaying him. And typically, if he hadn't gotten injured, Cody Parkey has a better field goal percentage than that too. So 3.5, because Parkey, I think, is out. I think we dropped him on injury, and then the Saints picked him up and dropped him. But there's three kickers in the league, which, I mean, it brings up the point, well, do you drop him or do you try to let him develop and get better? Because he's not that old. I think he's been in the league 3 years. He's like 26. But looking at those other guys and thinking, well, they're better than him, makes it a little tough decision. But they're going to have to make a decision in the offseason. You can't make 70% of your kicks in a league where people are playing this close. So, any other thoughts on the kicking game? I don't want to
need all new special teams.
And are you guys, so you guys saw my note that I think the first coach, if a coach gets fired this year, we talked about it last week, people thought it'd be Joe Woods. I think the first coach to be fired probably has to be special teams. It's got to be Mike Prefer, right? Or do you guys disagree?
I think I can't disagree with that.
Yeah, but I mean, the hard thing about special teams is it's the one position that changes personnel every year. So
every week
even. Yeah, excuse me. So it's hard to judge the coach when you don't know what his personnel situation is. I'm more on the Joe Woods firing just because I just feel like that defense is so predictable and just bland. I mean, I'm not seeing any like hidden packages or like we're hardly blitzing. We got talent out the wazoo, and I don't know what's going on with it. Yeah. But
yeah, I just think for special teams, and we won't get too deep into it because we've got offseason stuff to go eventually, but I just think our kick return doesn't look good. Our punter is the worst he's ever been since he's been on the roster. Our kicker is not doing very good. And I guess our kick coverage is okay. We muffed an onside kick last week and gave up the ball. It just seems like every aspect of the special teams. And I know there's different personnel, but the job of the special teams coordinator is to kind of figure that out. It's the bottom of the roster guys. You dress 53 and the bottom 11, I guess the bottom 8 minus the specialists are your guys. And you just hope to have young, fast guys who can do it. And it seems like young and fast is a little more of what we have this year than usual.
You know what is kind of funny about our kick or our punter? I noticed he started to decline when he got his own beer. Cleveland gave him his own beer, and then suddenly
he started reading headlines.
Yeah, he went really downhill after that.
Yeah, he started strong and he had a ton of potential, but he hasn't been good. And his backup is slightly better than him, but not that good either. I don't know. You guys brought up Joe Woods. I thought the defense was pretty good this game. I thought they were not elite. And I said before, in order for us to win this game with the guys we had held out, I thought they had to have one of their elite games, one of their best few games of the season. And they were pretty good. I don't think anybody thinks they were bad. They just weren't good enough. They just weren't elite. And I don't know if that was, I mean, there was a couple guys out. People said we have guys out. We did. We had Greg Newsome out, but he's Greedy Williams plays fairly well in his position. And Clowney was probably the bigger loss with Tack McKinley filling in for him. And then eventually Porter Gustin for Tack McKinley. And, you know, McKinley has been okay lately, and Porter did his best job filling in, but Clowney was our biggest loss. I just think when you say next man up, it's been a little too much to overcome on the offense with all the people out, but I think we could have pulled a next man up defense this week because we did have the guns for that. And they caused two turnovers. They kept them to 13 points for 59 minutes and 57 seconds, which is pretty good for a defense, but it just wasn't the splash we needed for the win. So,
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
So we'll, Joe, you know, we'll get into the Joe Woods case later. I thought he was okay. I think his defense the second half of this season is better than the first half, and that's what I was looking for progress, especially knowing guys will be back, almost everybody on the defense next year. What did you guys think of Mullins today, yesterday?
I mean, I didn't think he was bad. I don't think he had a whole lot of attempts. I had to close my ESPN browser because it kept bringing up some video. But I mean, I think, like you said, he scored like about right on par with where Baker has been playing. So I think we were like right about even. He gave us a shot to win.
He did. He played pretty bad in the first half. He came around in the second. And I'm having a heck of a time typing. He came around in the second, and he did make a play or two. He kind of reminded me of playing a little bit the way Baker plays when he's healthy, scrambling around a little bit and finding a play here and there. I think he's probably our future back. Like, did you guys watch that game and think Case Keenum can probably take his $6 million next year, and we can give Mullins $2 million and move on?
Yeah, without question. I mean, you're going to pay him a lot. You're barely going to pay him, and he'll be here.
And he hasn't even been on the roster, and he's not practicing. I think you put him in that spot, he might be your better option going forward. What do you think, Dale?
Dale lost connection. He's out.
Forever?
I don't know.
for the rest of time. All right, we'll keep running it through. We're a big part of this through anyway. Where were you on the running? I put that I was kind of disappointed because I felt like in the first half we barely ran the ball, and I was super pissed about it, and I was almost ready to just stomp my feet. And then in the second half they picked up the running game, and I don't know if it was just more successful, so they started going, or it was a close game, or the defense got tired, but it started working. They started going to it more, and it really made the team look different even in the passing game. I can't figure out for the life of me why that isn't happening from the start.
Yeah, I mean, I think the reason we're struggling in our run game anymore is because it's not hard to see the identity of our offense. I mean, teams come in, play us, and they know, sell out, stop the run, because they don't have a quarterback that's going to beat you. And even if they do, the receivers ain't going to catch the ball. They've been riddled with drops this year. Everyone knows you want to beat the Browns, you sell out to stop Chubb. Force the quarterback that's playing to beat you, and odds are he won't.
And I think that is probably true, and we had a little discussion at the bar because the guy I was sitting next to was like, they're just stacking the box and doing run blitzes also. And I said, I don't care. I still – just run anyway, because I think with the linemen out or in, they've shown well enough and Chubb is good enough and can kind of explode a run at any point. I just do it anyway and take your chances going down with that game plan. And if it doesn't work, at least you went down with your strength. And I know a lot of people disagree with that, but just the way they come out passing and try to go to the run at the end, I just don't understand it.
Yeah. It's easy to say in hindsight too, some things, but I remember,
well, we said it in foresight, because when we talked about the game plan,
yeah,
we said the Raiders are the 28th ranked running defense in the league. I'm coming out and just running no matter what they do. Of course they come out and sell out against the run at the beginning and just hope you stop doing it. And we do. We fell for it. We run like twice on a drive and then we're like, I guess we're passing.
Well, I think where I was going, with that take was actually in our very last drive. We did three runs and we couldn't make a first down with three and out and got rid of the ball. And I remember thinking to myself, man, they know we're going to run. It's so obvious. Like, maybe a play action pass to a first down here and you can win this game.
And I'm okay with that, timeouts. Actually. I don't disagree with that take. I just think you have an even better chance to do that if you came out running most of the game, because then they're going to sell out even harder on the run. And that's when you can really bust them at the end with a play action. But they come out passing earlier, and then you have to kind of switch to the run. And I want them to do it the opposite way. I don't know if it would work. I'm not an offensive genius, but I don't think we've seen it yet this season where they just were like, you know, we're going to do what the Patriots did that one game. We're just going to run over and over and over and over. And it's not that weather of a game, but I'm just waiting to see them try that once where they just, where they take Chubb in at the beginning and in the end of the first half, he has 15 runs already. So that's kind of what I would love to see. Is just we end the first half and Chubb doesn't have 7 runs. He's got 15.
Yeah.
I had marked on our little pre-pod list. Is it worth looking for bright sides at this point, or is it more like the numbers speak for themselves? We almost knocked ourselves out of the playoffs. Or is there worth a couple bright sides to talk about?
Yeah, I'm having a hard time looking at bright sides.
I get it.
It's just I'm really deflated at this point. And that game definitely took a lot out of me because I don't want to be this guy because I've heard it 100 times, but a healthy team beats the Raiders, you know? So
yes, I think it is true, though. I think most people look at that, how close it was, and thought, God, if you have like 3 or 4 more of your guys back, you don't even just beat them. You probably dominate them.
Right. I don't think there's any question. So, and in that scenario, you're in first place. So we really kind of lost this game based on COVID, and that's another hit to the stomach. But, I'm deflated, and I'm so – Chad, I know it's the Browns thing to say. There's always next year, and we get excited about the offseason, and I do. I always do. But I'm just tired, man, of it. I want to look forward to a playoff. I want to look forward to a postseason.
Yeah. Well, and I think people were for the first time, and that makes it even more disappointing. This must be what the 80s felt like.
Right,
When you actually thought you were going to win it, and then it was like...
Now we know why our parents are so angry.
Yeah, watching in 2004 was like, well, we don't really expect to win. And wow, we won 9 games or whatever it was then. Like, that's pretty amazing. Now when you expect to win and you lose, it's like, I was all in.
Right.
It's hard to compare. I don't know. It's hard to compare what's worse, just being bad or being disappointed. I think when the season's over and all the emotion is gone, we'll be happier that we weren't terrible. But in the moment when you're terrible and you expect it, it's easier. I'll say that. It's definitely easier. When we were a chronic 4 or 5 win team, it just felt easy. Like, you knew you'd lose. If you won, it was a huge deal. You were always the underdog. When you should be winning, it's more disappointing and harder to swallow. On my bright sides, I put in a couple just because I thought, you know, it's not all, like you said, looking for towards next year. I don't know where we're going to go with the team, what direction you'll go in, and I don't want to get too deep into it, but I don't feel like this is a lost cause. I can easily, at the end of the season, justify looking back and saying, without the injuries, this would have been a pretty good team. They almost surely would have made the playoffs. because they're pretty close to doing it, even despite all of this turmoil. And that makes me think with the age of their team, they'll probably be contending for the playoffs again, which means at least they'll be worth watching. I might not have my hopes as high next year as I did this year,
right,
but at least it looks like we have young pieces. A big majority of them are coming back. We only have three or four areas of need in the off season. And with that, I would say that the biggest bright side is that the young players on this team, and we have a lot of them, mostly look pretty good, which lets me think that Andrew Berry is decent at his job, which is really what you need in a franchise if you're going to try to build a culture and get consistent.
Yeah, definitely.
It was never going to happen in a year. They don't look like they gave up. They look like they're tough, and the younger players are some of their better players. So as they get more experienced, it's something worth watching. So,
and it also proves that he knows what he's doing in the draft. So each year we could improve and have confidence in improving.
Yeah, they might be worth holding on to guys and staying consistent. So next week's matchup is a pretty disappointing one. You go from gloomy to gloomier. Of course, after a loss like this against a totally winnable team, a beatable team, with all your guns out, you're going to get everybody back. But now you're rolling into what might be the best and hottest
team
in the whole damn NFL. How did we end up with this match on Christmas?
And I guess it's a testament their stadium.
To how good people thought they would be. It's just a testament to what the expectation was.
I remember saying to you guys that 3 out of 4 wins here will give us our shot at the division, winning the division. And the way I looked at the schedule was Green Bay would be our loss. So, because I can't imagine going to Lambeau. I can't imagine going to Lambeau and actually, I don't want to say, I think we can compete. But they're good. God, they look good. I mean, and then let's not forget that, what's his name? Mike Pettin is the defensive coordinator, a previous coach. I'm sure he's going to have a little revenge game himself.
Yeah. I would say the sad news is our best chance, I think, of winning this game is that Green Bay kind of just overlooks us because we are a not that strong non-conference competitor.
Yeah.
And it's Christmas. So crazy things can happen.
Also, they just locked up their division. I think last week with their win, they could lose out and actually still be the division.
Yeah. And they're going for the number one seed. So they're going to want to win, but there's a chance. I mean, the Cardinals just lost to the Lions.
Right.
You can't make me believe that didn't happen because they just thought, well, we're going to beat the Lions, and the Lions came out and took it to them. So it's not like nothing can happen, but I think all bets down. None of the four of us on this podcast are betting on the Browns to beat the Packers in Lambeau.
Yeah, I'd agree.
Short week of practice, so it's a bummer. Yep. They're rolling right now. They may be the best team in the NFL over the last 2-3 weeks.
And it looks like Myles Garrett might be a little dinged up. He's not admitting it, but he definitely was holding his groin or a hamstring there. I don't know what it was,
It looked like a groin.
Yeah.
And Tack McKinley is out.
Right.
He tore his Achilles, and we've been over that more than once, so I won't get into it. But that means he's probably out for this year. It's late in the season, which means he's probably out for next year. And he's never lived up to his potential, which means he may be out forever. It's a disappointing attempt at a comeback for him because he was banged up for a lot of the beginning of the season. And then he came back, and he actually looked really good last week. And it just didn't turn out for him. It's a shame, but I wish the kid the best. It's going to be a rough road back. Rodgers right now for the Packers is going to have to deal probably with Miles, maybe a little banged up, but even if he can play, he's just a force. And then Clowney should be back. But if there's a quarterback who does well at just making things work and navigating a defense – right now, besides Tom Brady, it's Aaron Rodgers. And right now he's throwing the ball better. So, it's going to take, I think the matchup is a loss. They're a very balanced offense. Even if our defense plays one of their better games, they're great on offense. And their defense has been a surprisingly better than I expected defense. So I don't think we've got an easy road ahead of us. I think we're hoping for a little bit of luck and a little bit of magic. With that, I'm sad that Dale got knocked off because I wanted to take a minute to talk about Nog. I guess.
Oh yeah.
I guess just me and you for Nog talk. Where? What kind of Nog did you put together here? Give me a little bit of your.
So I'll tell you my go-to recipe here. I do about a shot of brandy and a splash of spiced rum, and then I put a couple dashes of cinnamon sugar in that, and I spin it around for a little bit, let it dissolve. And then I'll just get any Nog that you get at store pre-made. You know, I don't make mine. I don't really know how. I just get the store-made one, and I pour it on top of that with some ice and stir it in. That's it. Okay. I don't know. I mean, love them. And you know,
I think that's how most people do it. I think you're doing it the right way.
Yeah. And the funny thing about Nog is it's so hit or miss with people because I like to tell people how much I like Nog and I'm excited for the cold months, the snow outside, the Christmas trees lit up, and that glass of Nog somehow just it all just goes together hand in hand. And so many people are like, oh man, Nog's so gross. I'm like, you know, I laugh.
I wonder if these people that think Nog is gross are drinking Nog or they just know what's in it and they just don't want to drink it.
Right. That's exactly what I think. Yeah. It's funny. So what do you got?
I know the same people that are like, ew, white Russian, it's alcohol and milk. And I'm like, I think a white Russian is delicious. I mean, a white Russian. You have to. So I did make my own Nog and I've done it before. Here's my issue. I'm just going to come clean. I drank it all. And so. So I had to stop at the store. I had to stop at the store and buy some Nog mix because the Nog I made, Kat and I drank. So that was out. So to make it is actually, it's not that hard. It's a little tricky. You just take egg yolks. And I think I have this pretty correctly memorized. You take egg yolks and you know how to yolk an egg, right? You just crack it and then you kind of pour the yolk back and forth between the two pieces of egg and all the white kind of falls out. It's just like
we actually
egg white omelet.
We actually discussed this on the pod a few weeks back.
Yeah, so you keep the yolk. You're mixing it with sugar and cream and nutmeg and milk. And it comes – and I made it and it came out great. I also – my little secret ingredient, I do a grinded clove in it.
Mm-hmm.
And then on top, I put cinnamon on top. I usually don't put it in the mix, but it came out great. We had it hot. We had it cold. And I do mine like yours. I like brandy and I do it a little more even mix. I do it about a half and half brandy and rum. And I made one today for me. I made one for Kat. And then I also made one because I keep hearing about it and this is not what I'm used to, but I keep hearing about people making it with whiskey. And so I made it with a little bit of bourbon. And I think we talked about that also last week that that's how Jim likes it. I wouldn't say I disliked it. I wouldn't say I hate it. If somebody offered that to me, it was the first time I ever had it. I would have thought not bad, but having them side by side, man, brandy and rum is that is the way to go.
Yeah, I agree.
So you can try the whiskey one if you want, because it's easy to.
I'm afraid to because I don't want it to ruin my. First of all, I like bourbon and I like whiskey in their own ways. I don't know if I want to bring them into this little world of mine of Nog.
Okay, but that's fair enough.
I just think I think we talked about it earlier how brandy is just it's a better mixer, and it's a little sweeter.
So, and I like brandy. I always have a bottle of brandy in the house. And I like to do sippers of brandy. I have my little snifter, so I feel fancier. But it has its place. Bourbon's a bigger part of my world. But in this drink, no, I'm with you. Give me the brandy. Give me some splash of dark rum, and I'm all in. So, Nog. You know what goes amazing with Nog besides depressing ground stock?
What's that?
A good Christmas movie.
Oh yeah.
So I had marked on the list besides sports today, I wanted to get into favorite Christmas movies. I was trying to ask Dale what his was and he hasn't answered yet, but I would say I do know Jim. 90% sure that Jim's favorite Christmas movie is A Nightmare Before Christmas.
Yeah.
And so I was going to catch what your and Dale's favorite Christmas movies were.
Yeah, definitely. No, I like this. So I'll just give you two because Amy, or my wife's, is Elf. And we always have to try to watch or do our family special Elf watching every year. And it's funny because it's got to the point where the kids are just so burned out on it. They just complain. And then once we start it, though, everybody's into it because Elf is so likable. You know, it's like you know the story through and through because everyone's
for
watching
our age time. Group. I think that is like our Christmas movie.
Sort yeah. Of. To me, I have some funny ones because I'm big on the whole like Die Hard, Gremlins. These are all Christmas movies because Christmas is in the background.
You just named Katie's favorite, and it is Die Hard.
Yes.
And it's funny because so many people argue whether it's a Christmas movie. I'm not going to. That's a stupid argument. It's obviously a Christmas movie.
Yeah, they got a Santa Claus in it. He even says
everything
ho,
about
ho.
It. You could. Yeah, he said he makes Christmas lines. It happens at Christmas. There's a Christmas party. Anybody who's trying to argue against it is just ignoring all of the Christmas aspects of the movie.
Yeah.
But that is hers.
It's funny.
Yeah. Is that yours or is that just one of them?
That is definitely, I would probably call that one. Or another one that is less spoken of, I was going to say, is Gremlins. Because a lot of people forget that the original Gremlins was Christmas night as well. And actually, there was a funny scene where there was a gremlin in a Christmas tree, and it like fell over on somebody.
Was that a present? Was the original was Gizmo originally a present?
Yes, you're right. It was a Christmas present.
Count it. I'm counting it.
Awesome.
I forget it. That's the one I most often forget to actually watch, but that should be counted. So Dale had messaged us. He said his is Home Alone, and it's hard to argue with Home Alone. That's such a classic for me. The music in it, the just the stupidity of it. It's such a kid's movie, but I watch it as an old man, and I just think it's still hilarious to me, and it's so nostalgic.
I'd have to go back and watch it. I haven't watched that in a long time.
Yeah. You should watch it again because it's probably, you could see probably what I'm talking about, some of the dumb stuff, but it is so nostalgic and there's so many lines in it and predictable stuff that you still find hilarious because you remember finding it hilarious when you were a really little kid.
Right.
Again, I think Jim has told me before that his favorite is A Nightmare Before Christmas, which I appreciate. It's kind of the emo kids Christmas movie.
Yeah. And well, so that one can kind of go, you can take that one as like a Halloween or a Christmas.
And I usually watch it at Halloween, which is why I don't watch it as much at Christmas, but I know it's his favorite. Mm-hmm. I think mine, and I struggle with picking these because there's so many good ones. I love Home Alone, and I love Elf, and I love A Christmas Story. That might be
A Christmas Story, mine. Yeah.
But I think out of all of them, and the ones I would debate, it would be A Christmas Story, Elf. But I think what might come in on top is National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation, which I was almost sure you were going to say just because of the amount of reference to Nog.
yeah. I should, yeah.
Yeah, so.
And I have the glass, too. I have the deer out of the moose glass.
Okay, yeah, that's perfect. Man, that's so perfect. So, yeah, that is, man, I can't wait to watch a couple more of these. We've seen a lot. We made this new tradition where I watch usually maybe one classic old-timey Christmas movie, and then we watch a handful of the ones we just named, basically. We try to get as many of the ones we just named in.
Yeah.
And then I usually also try to get in, like, this tradition just started with my fiance 2-3 years ago. We try to get in 2 or 3 really cheesy, terrible Hallmark Christmas movies. And if you haven't watched them, it is so funny. They all follow the exact same formula. They all have the exact same ending. They're all ludicrous. Like girl, big town, New York girl lawyer somehow makes the boss mad and she has to go take a case in rural Nebraska.
Yeah.
And while she's there, her fiance, who you're made to think is a giant jerk, you know, maybe
somehow softens up
or something. And while she's in Nebraska, she falls in love with the local baker guy and they decide to live together in Nebraska for the rest of their lives. It's just something of that type. It's always two girls or two guys. One of them you're made to like right away. One of them you're made to hate. Somebody in a city situation always moves to some rural, snowy, Christmassy place, and then they change their mind about the season and love. And by the end of the movie, the person that they have been spending their time with for the last 1 week to a month, they fall in love with and get engaged. And it's like, in what world? But do you want to do any game recaps? We're getting towards the end here. I had more fun trailing off into Christmas.
I did. I don't have anything much on the game recaps, to be honest with you. If you wanted to get into something else really quick before we ended, I actually did like what Dale brought up there on the final three games for our division.
Yeah, let's teams. Go down to that. Yeah,
because it is actually interesting how this could play out. Actually, as much as I keep counting us out,
I'm looking at this NFL recaps. What should we talk about? Section, and Dale had written in terrible. Everything was terrible except for Thursday night.
Yeah,
preseason was better than most of this. And then he just
Bucks
goes
are hurt.
Into,
yeah,
yeah. Then he just goes into how everyone is hurt and on COVID and terrible. So I have no problem skipping that whole section and going over this. So let's do it. So we have the so basically what Chip is talking about here is Dale had listed out the Browns, Bengals, and Steelers, and Ravens final three games, and essentially the idea that it's still honestly this is bad enough that the second place team in the division may or may not even make a wild card, but the division is somehow still up for grabs, and we have three games left for each team. Go ahead and take us through them.
Yeah, so we have Packers, Steelers, Bengals. But the one that I'm really looking at here right now is Steelers have Chiefs, Browns, Ravens. What scares me about this is, God, it would be so Steelers. The Chiefs just got hit with some COVID news. They lost Tyreek Hill and their tight end, Travis Kelce. And obviously,
that's huge if they don't make it back in time, and they probably won't.
No, it's not looking like they will. And also, as we know, every day, I'm sure they're going to be losing more players now because that was just the beginning. So it'd be so Steelers to just get an easy Chiefs win because they're decimated with COVID loss. And then they're right back in this. So really, it's like the entire, all four of us are fighting for this division, and we're all four right there. So we all have two division games left, which is big because the Bengals got the Ravens, Chiefs, Browns, and Ravens got Bengals, Rams, Steelers. And as I said,
the NFL does a shit job of scheduling, but the thing they did the best in the last 2-3 years is making sure these division games fall at the end.
The only problem with all of us having division games is someone also has to win.
Right. This is what they wanted, and they put this in the position, and I hated the scheduling. I always thought you should play your three division teams in the first, 4 to 6 weeks, and you should play your last three division games in the last 4, 5, 6 weeks at most. And the beginning is not like that, as you can see by us playing the Ravens twice in a row. But the end is like that. It is, and these are weird matchups too, because a lot of these teams are pretty even, and I would be willing to say, as I'm looking through these win losses wins, you know, I was kind of just jotting down just because I was wondering who would win these. And of course I optimistically put the Browns as a loss to the Packers, but then a win at the Steelers and Bengals, keeping them right there with a possibility. But the Bengals have the Ravens, that could go either way. The Chiefs, who should get their COVID guys back. Granted, Mahomes doesn't go out the next week. And then the Browns, which is, you know, winner take all, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
The Steelers, I agree with you. That's what kind of scares me. They have the Chiefs, who are going to be missing guys, then the Browns, who, and I think we're better than that. Ravens, my wonder will be, is Lamar back or does it matter? Because right now their backup looks like he's playing better than Lamar has been playing lately.
Mm-hmm.
So this is going to be a heck of a ride for the last 3 weeks. And it's funny because I think this would be so different if we had won this week and people would be so engaged to how this was going to turn around. But I think our listeners, the guys I spent the time with at the Browns Packers bar, you guys, everybody is slightly disengaged because of the thought that it might be over and what should be the craziest 3 week playoff push ever. Because the reality is one of these teams has to win two or maybe three of these final games, and one of them probably will. And whoever it is probably going to the playoffs, and the rest are going to be watching them.
Mm-hmm.
So do you have any thoughts? Do you think somebody's got an edge? I'm terrified like you are that it might end up being the Steelers in a season that they have no business being anywhere near the playoffs.
Yeah. I mean, I guess the Steelers are scared, but the Bengals and the Ravens having one game lead on all of us is mm-hmm. Also scary because they obviously have a little bit more wiggle room. So we need a few things to fall against them. And with them playing each other is not very helpful because, like I said, at least one of them has, to win.
I think the Ravens have the toughest schedule. We play the Packers. We might have the toughest schedule, but outside of us, I think the Ravens might have the toughest one because the Steelers have the Chiefs, but you're right. COVID gives them a better edge than they deserve. But the Ravens are playing the Bengals, who are very good right now. The Rams, who should all be back from COVID and ready to go. And then the Steelers, who, let's face it, tend to be and doesn't matter how good they are, kind of hard game rival with them. And this is what could be Ben Roethlisberger's absolute last game. And that's going to be really interesting to see. So, I don't know. Ravens got it tough. The Browns have it tough. Everybody's got a pretty bad breakdown.
Yeah, yeah.
Tennis. These are just a bunch of tough games, so it could really go. There's the craziest scenarios that could happen through this week. And I guess we'll all be still there to watch it. Yeah. Let's all hope for a Packers-Browns miracle. Where we topple this off, because everybody would be on a cloud nine different level if that happened.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Because, Chad, here's what I could see. If we could beat the Packers and then the Chiefs and the Rams capitalize on the other three opponents in our division, honestly, it could come down to – I could see this coming down to Browns-Bengals week 17 for the division.
Oh, would that be the NFL's dream?
God, oh yeah. Well, I would love to see that. And
I would love it too. We play the Bengals well, and even though they're playing a little better than us, you know, most of the season, we played great against them. Oh, that would be the dream. It stinks that you know you were spot on. We all pegged the Browns to have that loss against the Packers, and I think that's what kills you. Is if that had happened, if we had mystically had a missed kick at the end of that game, and we beat the Raiders, nobody would care about next week. We'd all be thinking about how do we line up against the Steelers and the Bengals, two winnable teams to end the season and go to the playoffs.
Correct.
And that's not the case, but it could all be turned around with a miracle on Christmas.
Right. Right.
You'll shoot your eye out, kid.
Yeah.
Well, so get ready for my ho 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 meme if we get kicked down the slide after this week.
Yeah.
But, all right. Well, it was good talking about it. We better get out of here.
Yeah, definitely. In
an hour. So,
well, here's to a good Christmas. I hope everyone enjoys the holidays, and we'll be tuning into the Browns on Christmas Day and get back at you next week.
All right. Like and subscribe and all that other good stuff.
All right, buddy. I'll talk to you next week.
Ho, ho, ho.
Ha ha ha.